edition of the Young Turks on this lovely Friday. And guess what? We have a power panel.
Rap.
Right, we drop it like it's rocks.
Look at this.
Hey guys.
This is an unusual combination though.
It is, very unusual.
I like it though.
Jimmy Dore, Steve-O, we're having a power panel. You guys are the aggressive progressives.
Yes. Oh wait, right? I'm Jimmy Dore. I thought I was Mankiewicz. I look alike. Anyway.
So we have a great show ahead for you guys. Later on, we're going to talk about how Republicans are considering doing away with the one deduction that helps the middle class. And then later on, we will talk about Governor Jim Justice of West Virginia switching over from Democrat to Republican. Lots of great news today. Lots of interesting
stuff going on.
Yeah.
So what's the top story today? Or the first story at least?
Well, we can start with the first story.
All right.
Let's dive right into it. All right. Donald Trump's administration has been plagued with a number of leaks, some coming from White House officials, others coming from members of Congress, and the media continues to report on these leaks to, you know, the detriment of Trump and members of his administration. Now, as a result, Jeff Sessions has decided to take matters into his own hands, and the DOJ is warning the media that it could be subpoenaed if it either airs or writes about information that has been disclosed through these leaks. Now, Sessions announced a government-wide crackdown on leakers, which will include a review of the Justice Department's policies on subpoenas for media outlets that publish sensitive information. Now, I have more information for you, but first, let's hear from Jeff Sessions himself, who gave a press conference in regard to this matter.
One of the things we are doing is reviewing policies affecting media subpoenas. We respect the important role that the press plays and will give them respect, but it is not unlimited. They cannot place lives at risk with impunity. We must balance the press's role with protecting our national security and the lives of those who serve in the intelligence community, the armed forces, and all law-abiding Americans.
All right, so just to give you a little more detail into what the Justice Department is planning to do, let's go to graphic 3. The Justice Department, FBI, and government intelligence agencies will direct more resources into these investigations of government leaks and would prioritize prosecuting those that pass sensitive information along to the press or foreign officials. Sessions said his Justice Department has already tripled the number of active leak investigations over the previous administration, and that the FBI would create new counterintelligence unit to manage the cases. So they're getting serious about these leaks, and you know, Sessions mentioned that, you know, he respects freedom of the press and that it's going to be a delicate balance, but I'm skeptical as in terms of whether or not they're really going to strike that the right balance.
So there are a number of problems here.
Right.
Number one, this is a direct attack on the press. So if there are leaks and the leakers are engaging in some sort of bad behavior and you want to go after the leakers, that's a different issue. And I'm largely okay with that, and they sort that out. But when you go after the press and you subpoena the press and you make this press disclose their sources and all that, that's a direct attack. It has a massive chilling effect on the press and the media. Mm-hmm. So if the press is receiving information from multiple sources, and the press hopefully is responsible and they don't publish information, for example, they wouldn't say our military is hiding in this location and they're gonna attack the terrorists tomorrow at 6 p.m., right? Like, obviously the press shouldn't do that. But the press, you know, it's their right to adjudicate what is, worthy of being printed or shown on air, whatever it may be. So for the Justice Department to go after the press is an attack. I mean, that's an attack on the First Amendment.
Right. I mean, yes. And of course, from the right, we're seeing this argument that those on the left are attacking First Amendment rights and free speech. Well, included in free speech is a free press. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember any publication writing about any leak that puts anyone's life in jeopardy. And that kind of fear-mongering is what I'm hearing from Jeff Sessions.
And if you care one tiny bit about freedom of speech and the First Amendment, this is where it starts. Mm-hmm. So if some private institution or some private university says you can't say certain words here, or we don't want to let certain people speak here, yes, that's an infringement on the First Amendment. But that is secondary, tertiary, compared to the government.
That's right.
Prohibiting the press from disclosing certain things that the government is doing. The press, the whole point of the press is to have a functional democracy and to be watchdogs for against power and corruption. So if the government, the powerful, now has the power to destroy that institution, well, then you don't have a functioning democracy. So if you care one bit about it, if you care a lot more about Jeff Sessions going after the press than about, you know, some liberal snowflakes somewhere who are allowed to have a safe space. Like, that should be the last of your concerns.
So I'm trying to figure out, didn't he say he's just going to enforce the full letter of the law, or did he say they're going to do extra things? Because it just sounded like, you're right, if you go after the leaker, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But did they threaten the, I mean, I know he did kind of semi-threaten the press, right? I know he said that thing and he didn't take any questions and he left the room. But, like, is there anything like that explicitly threatens the press?
They're going to revisit the potential of subpoenaing journalists. And so, look, you subpoena a journalist for one of these investigations, what's going to happen? They're going to be pressured to identify who their sources are. And journalists don't do that. Right. Journalists are not supposed to disclose their sources. And there have been journalists in the past who have, you know, faced prosecutorial proceedings as a result of that. Some of them have even been thrown in jail in the past because they refused to note who their sources are. So I don't know if they're planning on really going after journalists in that way. But I think that would have a chilling effect on freedom of the press. And look, so far, again, maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, please correct me, send me a tweet, let me know. The information that has been reported by these journalists has not put anyone's life in danger. They've been incredibly embarrassing to the president. I mean, the fact that, you know, the latest leak indicates that the president had a call with the leader of Mexico and said, yeah, you know, let's just keep it real. This wall is not like the most important thing. Yeah, it's embarrassing because you lied to your base. You lied to the people who voted for you. And so, something that's embarrassing is not the same as something that puts anyone's life in jeopardy or threatens national security.
That's what they always say, that it threatens someone's life. They said it with Chelsea Manning, right? Mm-hmm. Even just the other day, someone from the Obama administration tweeted out that lives were at risk. And I'm like, that's just a smear for Chelsea Manning, right? They keep saying that. Crackdown on the press, I think, is kind of bipartisan, because a lot of people were upset about the Obama administration using the Espionage Act to prosecute six mm-hmm. Journalists, which was a record. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so Trump is now even getting, because they can't stop the leaks from their own White House, they're going to threaten the press. It is weird, though. How do you guys feel about this, that it said that the full transcripts of his phone calls with foreign leaders were leaked to the Washington Post? I missed that story. I don't know how I missed that story, but I did.
That's what Anna was just talking to.
About. The right. wall so, with the Mexican leader?
Yeah, yes. I actually do have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Because
we can't have foreign leaders thinking that can't speak openly
right.
with our president because that gets leaked. So I have a problem with that. So if you want to go after those leakers, that's fine.
Yes.
But I have a bigger problem with Jeff Sessions basically taking the power of the executive branch, co-opting the judiciary, because subpoena power is a power of the court. So you have to comply with it, otherwise now you're in contempt of court and you could go to jail. Mm-hmm. So co-opting the courts to compel journalists to comply with the dictates of the executive branch. So that's where it gets really problematic. And they always this is the tricky sleight of hand that they always do. Mm-hmm. So you talk about national security. Mm-hmm. It's national security. This is mm-hmm. really important. Lives are at stake. But then they're going to go after sensitive information. Well, what does that mean, sensitive?
Right.
It makes someone look bad, or is this some sort of life-threatening issue that really impacts national security? So they say, we do it for national security, but we're gonna go after you for sensitive information. So it's very, very tricky. And like I said, if you care one bit about the First Amendment, you should be super vigilant about any encroachment to the rights of journalists. But Jimmy's correct. This is a bipartisan effort.
It is.
It looks uglier with Trump because he does everything over the top. Mm-hmm. But Obama did a similar thing. I mean, since the Bush, the second Bush years, mm-hmm. and maybe even before, there has been a consolidation of power by the executive branch. Mm-hmm. They are becoming stronger and stronger, and it's part of the Bush doctrine, and Cheney and all of his lawyers over there. They have empowered the executive to crazy levels where it's never intended to be this way.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it throws off what we're supposed to have with a balance of power in mm-hmm. our country. And yeah, you're right, it's skewed now. But I think that the most important thing is, look, there's a certain culture in this White House. And I love Scaramucci's quote of the fish rots from the head down. You're right, the fish does rot from the head down. We are seeing more leaks in this administration than ever before, and there's a reason for that. There's a certain type of culture that's being perpetuated by our president. And so, yes, go after the leakers, do an investigation, that's fine. But more importantly, try to understand why it is there are so many more leaks happening within your administration.
It's just flat out poor leadership. Mm-hmm. He surrounds himself with yes men who are sycophants, and those folks have nothing to offer except flattery. So they're all insecure, and they're backstabbing each other like crazy. And you saw it firsthand with Scaramucci, Bannon, Reince Priebus, Spicer, Huckabee Sanders. I mean, it's chaos over there. The other problem with what they're doing is this. I mean, the first graphic that talks about how they're tripling the number of investigations. Mm-hmm. They're starting a whole new unit. I mean, these are resources.
Absolutely.
I thought we cared about terrorism. I thought we cared about sex trafficking. I thought we cared about all these other issues. White collar crime. Well, all of that is now in the back burner because above and beyond anything else, this administration cares about its own self-image and perpetuating its own power. So they're going to spend all their resources going after leakers instead of these other matters that are, ostensibly a lot more, or actually not ostensibly, actually mm-hmm. A bigger threat to national security and the well-being of the American people.
Absolutely. All right, moving on to some other news. Federal prosecutors in New York have subpoenaed the company of Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner, of course, a senior advisor to Donald Trump and also his son-in-law. Now, this has to do with Kushner properties going to foreign countries and essentially advocating for investment in US properties that they're trying to develop in return for what's known as EB-5 visas. These are visas for wealthy investors who put money into US-based projects and then get this so-called golden visa, this ability to get a visa just because they're rich and they're investing in US properties or US projects. Now, the program issues green cards to immigrants who invest $500,000 in US-based developments, 85% of which are Chinese. Now, remember, it was a big story when Kushner Properties went to China, had this big meeting with wealthy Chinese investors, and essentially let these investors know, hey, guess what? President's son-in-law. He's connected to us. And if you invest, you can get this visa. They're not supposed to do that. That's against the law. Trump also reauthorized the EB-5 program the day before Jared's sister, Nicole Kushner, pitched the visas to potential foreign investors. EB-5 applicants also do not have a way of proving their level of skill beyond the ability to finance projects for US developers. The only reason why I bring that up is because this news comes right after Donald Trump claims that he wants to lessen legal immigration into the country because he only wants to allow skilled workers and skilled immigrants
who
into the country.
English.
Who speak English, by the way. So I love that the federal prosecutors are going after, Kushner properties, because there are so many negative ramifications of doing what they did. Not only are they breaking the law by mentioning Jared Kushner and essentially selling them these golden visas, but it's artificially inflating the housing market here in the United States. Mm-hmm. By the way, that type of foreign investment is artificially inflating the housing market in lots of other countries as well. And so it infuriates me that they keep getting away with it, and to know that prosecutors are finally doing something about it is good news.
Yeah, and for those of you out there who support Donald Trump because you think he's strong on immigration issues, that he cracks down on illegal immigrants and on legal immigrants, it's all a hoax. You've been totally suckered by him because he has no problems hiring foreign workers to work in his companies. And the reason why he's trying to make it harder for legal immigrants to come in is because then this is the only way of getting in,
right,
through the EB-5 visa. And where would that money go? It gets funneled right to his family members. And his whole scheme is so simple. All he wants to do is self-deal. Make deals with other countries, sell out our country, and enrich himself and his family. That's what this is all about. So whether it's the Russians, mm-hmm, the Chinese, the Argentinians, it doesn't matter. He'll cut a deal with anyone.
That's
anyone,
right,
to make himself richer.
So what Nicole Kushner did, correct me, what she did was she went to these rich Chinese investors, mm-hmm, and said, invest in a project that we have going in the United States,
yes,
and then we'll give you visas?
Yes.
That's exactly right. And again, the timing is just incredible, right? Because
Trump
reauthorizes this program, and then a day later, Nicole Kushner has this big meeting with these investors in China. And so, yeah, it's all about selling visas to highest bidder.
Right, and think about that. So it's not a coincidence that those dates lined up like that. Mm-hmm. So Nicole Kushner probably had that meeting set up with the Chinese, and she, and through back channels or directly to Trump or his people, said, hey, you gotta, reauthorize this right away, because otherwise when I pitch them tomorrow, they're not gonna invest. So please do it right away. So come on, guys, this is rampant and obvious, over the top self-dealing.
And by the way, I just wanna talk about this and immigration and all of that for a little while longer, because I think a lot of people are misled about what goes on with immigration or how foreigners have a negative impact on our lives, right? Look, I know that we get painted as bleeding heart liberals or whatever, but I'm a reasonable person. And so, look, if immigration is hurting Americans and their job prospects, then yeah, I do want to balance it, right? So I'm not saying let's open our borders and let everyone in. I think that it's a very delicate balancing act, and unfortunately, we don't have people who are having sincere discussions about this. We have a lot of demagogues, we have a lot of negative, fringe individuals who get all the attention and they basically monopolize the conversation. But I think it makes sense to have a real analysis of the impact of immigration and make smart policy decisions based on that. But if you really want to focus on how foreigners are harming Americans economically, this type of investment is harming us economically, right? Where we're literally selling visas to wealthy people abroad who either want the visas or, to be quite honest with you, are looking to launder their money. We have people laundering their money from Russia, and they do so by buying properties here in the United States.
That's
Same
right.
with China, okay? That's a big problem, and I want to do something to stop it right away. And also, here's another thing. Trump talks a big talk about employing Americans. Okay, so if you want to employ Americans, why are you raising the cap for foreign workers to come here into the United States and take American jobs? Particularly jobs that you need for your properties, right? Trump Properties is looking to hire more foreign workers. That's weird. Doesn't that seem like it's a little inconsistent with what Trump was campaigning on? I mean, he doesn't care about you guys. And I'm not just saying that because I don't like him. I'm saying that because I know for a fact he does not practice what he preaches. Why is he bringing in foreign workers if he claims that he wants Americans to work those jobs? He's just full of it, man.
Yeah,
yes.
And to paint a very clear picture as to why these foreign investments hurt the US economy in many ways, is that, so for example, here in Los Angeles, there's a neighborhood called Manhattan Beach. It's beautiful there, okay? It's this beautiful beach community, and there's a finite number of houses right along the ocean. So when I first moved to the US, LA back in 92, those homes are just a couple $100,000, and I know prices go up. But now, just those lots, the lots are selling for $10 million mm-hmm. each. And then it's another $5 million or so to put up a house there. Because there's only maybe 100 of those homes. And that's being impacted by super rich Chinese and super rich Russians. And many of those homes remain empty.
They remain empty. Yeah. And you know what they do?
And they drive up the prices for everyone in the neighborhood, so Americans are now priced out of those homes.
That's right. So if you are earning, you know, upper middle class income, it's almost impossible for you to own homes in certain areas of this country, and it's because of those foreign investors. And another thing I wanted to note, there are laws and regulations that state if you buy a home, you need to live there for X amount of years. You can't just buy it and you know, use it as an investment when it just stays empty. And so now there are companies popping up that literally try to make it seem like there's someone living there when there's no one living there at all. They'll put shoes at the front door.
No.
It's absurd. It's absurd. So that's what's really going on. And again, I thank these federal prosecutors in New York for going after Kushner Properties for doing this. But more importantly, I want them to broaden their scope and not hyper focus on just what Kushner Properties are doing, because the reality is there are a lot of other developers out there that are doing something similar. Anyway, we got to take our first break. Let's do that and make sure to tweet to us using the hashtag TYTLive. We will respond to them when we come back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hour One. Jimmy and Steve with you and Anna. All right, so Gabby Marita tweets in and says, "Do my eyes deceive me? I thought the triumphant return of Steve-O to the power panel is tonight the triumphant return."
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gabby. Appreciate it.
Yeah. She also says it's always good good when Steve's on. Brandon Atkins says the elf in chief is trying to prove his value to Donald. He does look like the Keebler elf.
But like an evil
Who looks
Keebler
like
elf.
The Keebler elf?
Jeff Sessions.
He does look like
right?
him. Yeah.
All right. He also says they want to prevent information from getting to the people. Well, yeah, absolutely. Especially when that information is super embarrassing and reveals what Trump really thinks about the issues he peddled to his base. And then also Super Chat. We love the Super Chat messages. And Story of Amino says, much love for TYT and their information. Love, Casper.
Who doesn't love Casper? Come on.
A lot of people, actually.
They're crazy. They're all a bunch of bots. I don't believe them.
Get out of here. No, people don't like me. It's all right. And then finally, I'm going to plug membership, okay? Because members help keep this show alive. You guys help keep us independent, and we love you. All right, so James Stout and Giselle Grinnett, I think that's how you say your name. The only reason why I went, oh, Giselle, is because we email back and forth time to time. She's awesome. Also, you guys should check out membership by going to tytnetwork.com/join. The post game today will feature Malcolm. He has returned with weekly world news and more. It also features Hannah Cranston and Steve-O.
We did it yesterday, but it's for today.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Can I just say one more thing about a membership? So, you know, I work behind the scenes here at TYT, and I do a lot of business meetings. And whenever I go, they ask me about, you know, our revenue model and, you know, how we survive. And I talk about, you know, YouTube, Facebook, and all the different places where we make money. But whenever I get to our members, that's when everyone is so impressed.
Yeah.
They can't believe it.
Yeah.
And when I tell them about the way the members help fund the build out of our studios, the way they help fund our journalism campaign to hire all these new people, every single person I ever talk to, from the CEO of major companies to like their business development people, they are just a tad bit jealous.
Yeah.
And just so impressed.
Yeah.
And it gives me more bargaining power and more leverage, because I don't have to always take their deal, because I could always say no, because we have members backing us up. So
right.
I want to say a personal thank you to the members who support us.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to more news. That is amazing. It sucks because I really like Keebler cookies, and now it's kind of been tainted.
Well, he's the evil elf that was kicked out of the Keebler clan.
Yeah. He doesn't get to live in the tree.
Yeah.
Aww.
He started his own clan.
Oh, man. That was good, guys. All right. Moving on. Many are wondering how Donald Trump plans on balancing the budget when he would like tax cuts for the wealthy. Well, unsurprisingly, the Trump administration is eyeing the one and only deduction that the middle class gets to take advantage of, mortgage deductions. Awesome. Now, nothing set in stone. This is just something that has been proposed, but apparently there was a White House roundtable where they were discussing balancing the budget and taxes. And unfortunately, it seems like one of the things that was suggested was doing away, not necessarily doing away, but capping, further capping the mortgage deduction that middle class individuals get to take advantage of. So despite promises from the Trump administration in April that it would, quote, protect the homeownership deductions, multiple sources tracking tax reform said that the cap on the mortgage interest deduction currently set at the interest on up to $1 million of mortgage debt could be lowered in tax reform. Okay, so let me break a few things down before we continue. So if you are a single tax filer, if you are a married tax filer, in most cases, the cap is already at $500,000. And so when they say the cap is at $500,000, it means that it's the value of the mortgage that you took out, the value of the loan, your outstanding debt for your mortgage. And so when you pay your mortgage, obviously you also pay interest on that loan, and that interest is tax deductible. So they essentially want to lower the cap, so it would be even more difficult for you to get more money in the form of a tax refund when you use that deduction on your taxes.
So can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So let's say I have my house and the loan on the house is $600,000.
Right.
Now under this new rule, I wouldn't be able to deduct
no.
it?
No, so
you get the first 500,000.
The first 500,000.
Oh.
So, okay, and then if in some cases, if you have two mortgages, they will allow you to deduct up to 1 million. And so they want to lower it for that and potentially lower it for individuals who have one mortgage as well. Again, this is an idea that they've mentioned, but the reason why I want to report on it is because this is the one and only deduction that the middle class gets to take advantage of. They never have conversations about corporate tax loopholes, which is where the real problem is. So we'll get to that in just a second. So Trump overwhelmingly actually won a straw poll by the National Association of Realtors during its annual meeting last year. And it's because he had promised that he's not going to touch this deduction. By the way, it also impacts developers who want to build more properties, right? And so these realtors are like, just don't mess with that, because it's going to hurt an already questionable housing market. So after tabling a 20% business tax on imported goods and services known as border adjustability, Republicans need ways to pay for tax cuts so they can minimize the amount those cuts could add to the deficit. The Tax Foundation, a tax policy think tank, estimates that after factoring in negative economic consequences, $308 billion could be saved over the 10-year budget window Republicans are working with by lowering the mortgage deduction. But here's the thing, instead of focusing on the mortgage deduction and doing away with that one deduction that, again, the middle class gets to take advantage of, why don't we focus on corporate tax loopholes? Now, Republicans will say over and over again, oh, our corporate taxes are so high. It's like 35%. It's crippling businesses in America. First of all, a lot of those deductions and loopholes don't apply to small businesses. They apply to massive corporations that don't need those loopholes to begin with. And if you think, Anna, you're just a liberal, you don't know what you're talking about, you're nonsense, corporate taxes are super high. Here are companies that paid no federal income tax from 2008 to 2015. These are some of the top earning Fortune 500 companies that get huge, huge tax breaks. Pepco Holdings, PG&E Corporation, Wisconsin Energy, NiSource, International Paper, First Energy, Priceline.com, Amos Energy, General Electric. Yep,
they're all American energy companies. Look at them.
They paid nothing in federal income taxes from 2008 to 2015, and the Trump administration would like to further cut their taxes. So guess what? How about you don't touch our mortgage deductions and actually focus on having the wealthiest corporations in the country pay their fair share of taxes. How about that?
So I have a different take on this.
All right.
Okay, so my take is this. They are correct to lower the threshold for the mortgage deduction. Here's why. Most Americans can't afford to have massive homes that have a $500,000 mortgage or $1 million mortgage or that. So if they lower the threshold to $500,000, I'm okay with it. That covers most Americans anyway. Mm-hmm. Plus, they want to double the standard deductions they can take. So that really helps the vast majority of lower income, middle income Americans. Now, what I don't want them to do is to do this to pay for other tax
cuts.
That's
right. Yes.
They should do this and take away the deductions for wealthy homeowners. So people who are buying, you know, multi-million-dollar homes, they don't need this deduction. They shouldn't get it.
Agreed.
But we should also leave the other tax cuts alone. I'm sorry. Don't do the other tax cuts.
Right.
So we would have a bigger surplus and spend that money on other things that matter a lot more. So the way they're doing away with this deduction to fund other deductions is wrong. They should have both deductions go away.
Yes. So let me jump in. Look, I hate slippery slope arguments. Mm-hmm. And I understand that I'm about to make a slippery slope argument. But I think that it's important to be protective of the types of deductions that middle class individuals get to take advantage of. I don't even want them to touch it. Even though I completely understand that the vast majority of Americans do not have mortgages over $500,000, I don't care. I don't want them to touch this, mainly because this is not the issue that's leading to the massive deficit that we have in the country. The fact that our corporations, the top earning corporations in the country, get away with not paying any federal income taxes, that's the problem. The fact that we subsidize a lot of these companies that don't pay any federal income taxes is part of the problem. Yes. I think that that's where the focus needs to be, as opposed to individuals who are out there working hard trying to, you know, earn enough money to buy a home.
Well, look, it's indisputable that the biggest problem we have is the corporate tax loophole, mm-hmm. where all those corporations pay zero taxes. I totally agree on that. And then on the issue of this particular tax deduction, many people have said, and these are people on the left, mm-hmm. that it is unfair because it allows rich people to buy more property, consolidate more wealth, because realistically in America, the fastest way of building wealth is home ownership.
Yeah.
And if you have the ability to take out $1 million mortgage and pay for it, well, that home that's worth $1 million today may not be worth $5 million tomorrow. But if you're not as rich, you take out $100,000 mortgage, well, your home will be worth $200,000 tomorrow. So now the gap went from, you know, it was a much bigger gap
in
wealth.
Yes.
So for those reasons, I'm not opposed to it necessarily, but I'm opposed to it if that is the way to fund even worse tax policy for the richest Americans.
You know, yeah. I know Trump is no fan of Jeff Bezos. So why wouldn't, you know, right now they're subsidizing Amazon to by giving tax breaks for them to come in, undercut, because they don't pay sales tax in lots of places, right? And so what they do is they're subsidizing this company to come in to undercut their brick and mortar stores. So when they lose a brick and mortar store, they lose that tax revenue. And they're subsidizing another company to decimate their tax base. I mean, that is, to me, if you want to cut a loophole, that would be the one I would cut, right? Mm-hmm. I would try to make sure that Amazon had to pay its real taxes so it wouldn't be able to unfairly compete against brick and mortar stores and undermine people's real estate tax base. So that, yeah, I'm saying if you want to look at where you want to cut.
How about Walmart?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they are the ones who started the whole trick of giving everyone 35 hours a week so they don't get benefits. And when you apply for a job at Walmart, many times they hand you paperwork so you can get on welfare.
Yeah.
So we are literally
subsidizing these companies.
Walmart as an institution. Meanwhile, they have record profits and their executives earn, you know, a tremendous amount of money, and the six Walmart heirs own as much as the bottom 40% of America. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we have a crazy system in place.
So, yeah, we do. And unfortunately, we focus on attacking the powerless while the powerful literally get away with, you know, not paying their fair share. Yeah. I was going to use different language, but I stopped myself.
They own our politicians, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what it all comes down to. All right, moving on
So you want to get money out of politics? What are you, alt left?
Yeah, I guess if that makes me alt left.
Is that a new term?
That's a new term, alt left, because anybody who likes Bernie's alti. That's what they say.
That's crazy. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the Senate and something interesting that they recently did. Lawmakers in the Senate have essentially done something to prevent Donald Trump from making appointments during their recess. This is incredible. So these lawmakers agreed to a series of pro forma sessions that ensures the Senate never officially goes on recess. The move effectively blocks President Donald Trump from making recess appointments while senators are away. Now, I think that this process kind of began when senators realized that there was a possibility that Trump could have fired Jeff Sessions and then found a way to get rid of Robert Mueller. But now it might be for a completely different reason. So many Americans must be wondering if the president is trying to pry open the office of Attorney General to appoint someone during the August recess who will fire special counsel Mueller and shut down the Russia investigation. But things are a little different now, okay? So Chuck Schumer released a statement and said, "Let me state for the record now, before this scheme gains wings, Democrats will never go along with the recess appointment if that situation arises. We have some tools in our toolbox to stymie such action. We're ready to use every single one of them." And they did. So Trump now has an open slot at the head of the Department of Homeland Security after he named General John Kelly as his chief of staff. So there is an open position, and the Senate wants to make sure that Trump doesn't make any appointments while they are on break. So
I would have played it differently, mm-hmm. to be honest. I would have let Trump fire Jeff Sessions. Because one, Jeff Sessions is a horrible human being, and mm-hmm. I would love to have him out of there. Number two, I think Trump really damages himself if he does that. Mm-hmm. And I think that accelerates his ouster. So I don't know that the Democrats play this right. And given their past track record, whatever it is that they do, they seem to be doing the wrong thing. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if this backfired on them. But what's interesting to me is how much the senators circle the wagons and protect their own. Because Lindsey Graham nearly lost his pearls uh-huh. when there was any kind of threat against Sessions. And he was like, "You are not gonna fire Jeff Sessions." And he went on a raving defense of him. So it's like a little club that they have. And once you're in the club, you protect one another. And it's like John McCain getting a standing ovation and applause when he left his deathbed to vote in favor of continuing the conversation in favor, for Trump care.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me how much the Senate is an insular body out to protect its own.
So this actually kind of thing that they're doing to Trump now was pioneered by the Democrats during the George W. Bush era. And Barack Obama, they did it to him too when he was trying to appoint the National Labor Relations Board. They did a pro forma session, so they were never in recess technically, and he didn't recognize it. And Obama, in one of his rare strong moments, he went and appointed the guy anyway. The Supreme Court overturned it, and they said Obama couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So they've been doing this since George W. Bush. It goes back to when a recess appointment goes back to when it took the senators a long time to travel back to their districts mm-hmm. and come back. Well, now it's one plane right away. So that doesn't really. So this is a stupid thing that they even have a recess appointment anymore. Anyway, so mm-hmm. yeah, they should. I think they should get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why the Democrats are fighting so hard to maintain Jeff Sessions. I get it because they don't want Mueller to be fired because they like Mueller.
Yeah.
But wow, that's letting him fire Sessions, I think, might be a good thing.
Yeah, but I don't think that this is just a Democratic effort. I don't think it's just Democrats in Senate that are pushing for this. I think there are GOP members in the Senate that see some of his behavior as problematic. And I think there are Republican senators, Republican members of Congress that see Trump as problematic, and maybe they're not as transparent about the way they feel, but I think that it's becoming more and more obvious that they see him as a threat, not only to the country, but I think they're more concerned about their own party.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, I totally agree. I think it's interesting that that the Republican senators are preventing their party leader from making these recess appointments. So the question to me is, are they doing it because they want Mueller in place and they want to see a real investigation? Mm-hmm. Or is it because they are looking out for their own and Jeff Sessions? Maybe it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, Anna. A lot of Republican lawmakers are not happy with Trump and they would rather him not be there. But they're too cowardly to do anything against him until it's politically expedient.
That's
so they're
going
to wait for a little bit. So when Trump makes himself more of a nuisance and drags the party out even more, and we'll see what shakes out next year in 2018. Mm-hmm. And if they lose some seats, then he's gone.
They're
going to turn on him. If they do fine and they maintain a lot of seats, then he might just coast throughout the first term. And then the reality is that in 4 years, if the economy is doing really well, I don't know that we oust him. Especially with the Democrats, the way they run campaigns.
Yeah, I know. That's another devastating part of all of this. In fact, we have an example of Democrats making a pretty terrible mistake when we come back from the break. Again, make sure you use the hashtag TYTLife to tweet to us. We will read your tweets when we come back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to TYT. Jimmy Dore, Steve-O, and Anna Kasparian with you. All right, a few TYT lives before we continue on with the rest of the stories. El Duende Chingon says, remember kids, whenever they're talking about lowering taxes, they're not talking about lowering your taxes. Yeah.
No, they are not.
If they do, it's like $20 for you, $20 million for them.
Yeah.
Remember when George Bush mailed everybody a check? You remember that?
That's right.
Yeah. I really like that check, though.
That's why they did it.
I mean, yeah. I definitely stimulated the economy with that $600. All right, Digital Shart says, when you lack empathy, something needs to affect you directly to sway you. Mortgage deduction would affect Trump diehards. Maybe. It depends on whether or not they actually go through with it. And even if they do, as Steve mentioned, it wouldn't necessarily impact rural white Americans who are lucky enough to own a property, because their mortgage is probably not worth $500,000. But I think it does show where their priorities are, though. And look, I made this point during the panel that I was on at Politicon. The panel was like heavily conservative. The audience was heavily conservative. We started talking about taxes, and I was like, and they all agreed, like, no, we do need to cut tax loopholes. And then I was like, okay, but Republicans don't want to cut corporate tax loopholes. They want to cut mortgage deductions. That's what they always focus on. And the audience was like, boo, boo. Like, I was making it up, and I'm like, I'm not making this up. I know this for a fact. And then this story came out, so it was kind of amazing. All right, Vance.
That person's name, Digital Shart?
Digital Shart, yes.
Do you know what a shart is?
It's when you fart and then, like,
yes,
fecal matter escapes the anus, I believe.
Jeez.
All right.
That is right.
Vance Miller says, the sad truth remains that the people in our governments do not view Sessions as the vile piece of shit that he is. You guys keep it 100, and that's why I love you.
He is. He really is.
Yeah.
He's that good.
He's not. No.
He's not good.
All right. You know who else is not good? The establishment Democratic Party, because they endorse really bad candidates, and we have another example for you.
Oh,
today. You guys ready?
Guy.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. The newly elected governor of West Virginia, Governor Jim Justice, has just announced that he is leaving the Democratic Party and switching over to the Republican side. Now, keep in mind that right before he ran as governor of West Virginia, he was a Republican, switched over to Democrat, and then ran. And because of the backing of establishment Democrats, he was able to win. And now he is switching his party. Now, before I get into the details about his past and what's really going on here and what the real issues are, let's hear from him and his reasoning for why he has decided to switch parties again.
Let me just say this to you as bluntly as I can say it. West Virginia, at the altar, when we had it done, like it or not like it, but the Democrats walked away from me.
You were never a Democrat to begin with, but nonetheless, let's hear a little more from him.
Today, I'll tell you as West Virginians, I can't help you anymore being a Democrat governor. So tomorrow, I will be changing my registration to Republican.
All right.
Sad.
Well, it's a...
The whole thing was sad in so many different ways.
Yes. Well, okay, him saying that he's switching party, I don't really care, right? I don't care because he was never... Look,
no, I'm sad that anyone has any excitement for this guy. So he is the richest man in West Virginia.
That's
he's a coal magnet.
Yes.
And the notion that he gives one shit about any one of those people cheering for him is preposterous. He was a Democrat because he thought it was expedient. Mm-hmm. Then he became a Republican because he thinks that's expedient. So people who bothered to go cheer for him, like, what are they thinking? That is
well, isn't it weird that the richest guy in the state becomes the ruler of the state? He becomes the governor. It's like we're living in medieval times. Like, they're the richest guy, and everybody's like, yeah, he's going to help us. The richest guy in the state is going to be your governor? This is what we've gotten to, though. This is how screwed up our politics is. This is what'll get you called an alt-lefty if you bring up how screwed up our, because now it's, you know, our Congress is filled with millionaires and billionaires. Now our governorships are all what is going on in this country?
Look, it's one thing for the constituents of West Virginia to think that this billionaire, who, by the way, has gotten in trouble in the past for not paying his fair share of taxes, and also has gotten in trouble in the past because he didn't follow certain safety regulations in regard to his coal mines. I mean, like, it's one thing if they think he's going to look out for them, and he's not going to. I feel like that has been, you know, the theme of
politics. I'm not sure if he's a billionaire.
Recently. He is a billionaire.
He is? He's a billionaire?
Yeah, he's a billionaire. But what I'm actually...
But he cares, though.
What I'm actually more angry slash disappointed in is how dumb establishment Democrats are.
They are dumb.
Okay, so I know you guys are probably going on a gigantic rant. Let me just quickly say my piece, okay? Oh my God. Okay, let me just start with this graphic because the information here will also probably infuriate you.
Yes.
Graphic 21. Justice's party switch is a blow for the Democratic Governors Association, which spent more than $1 million in an effort to get him elected last year, while the Republican Governors Association spent $3.7 million backing his GOP rival. So these Democratic governors, this association, huddle together and they're like, yo, here's a dude who actually doesn't have any values that are aligned with Democrats, okay? He is a billionaire who doesn't like paying his taxes. Yeah, exactly. Doesn't care about the safety regulations to protect his coal miners. Great, let's spend $1 million to get him elected in West Virginia. How about the Democratic establishment actually prop up people that have the same values as us, right? And that's the biggest issue. We had that issue with the, you know, general election, and then, you know, you have this issue on a smaller level when it comes to governors and you know, members of Congress. Just wake up. Stop spending money and resources on people that don't actually reflect our values.
So he was first elected to office last year, and he was wooed by both the Republicans and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Why? For his values or because he's rich? Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all the parties care about. So the parties care first and foremost about money. Do you have money? Do you have access to money? If you do, we're going to back you. We're going to woo you. Then we'll spend our money to back you because that's all we care about. So the Democratic Party wooed this guy, spent $1 million on him, and then he flipped. Because they're clueless. I mean, come on. So even when they win, they still lose.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And not all, obviously, but some Democrats would much rather run their mouths about how terrible someone like Bernie or his supporters are instead of actually doing a little bit of self-reflection to try to figure out why it is that people are leaving the electorate. members of the electorate are leaving the Democratic Party. They're not turning their backs on you. You've turned your backs on them, right?
Yeah.
And that's the big problem.
And one of the biggest complaints by the Democratic voters is that we didn't vote for Hillary, we didn't vote for a lot of people because they're the same. The two parties are the same. And then you have other people say, no, they're very, very different. Well, this proves they're not that different. They're literally the same. It's the exact same human being. He was a Democrat today, and tomorrow he's a Republican. He took $1 million from the Democrats, and tomorrow he took $1 million from the Republican Party. And it's the same donors funding the whole thing. So it gives total credence to the notion that the two parties are identical. They're not. There are differences. But you need to underscore those differences and explain to the voters why they should bother taking a day off from work, standing in long lines,
right,
to vote for a candidate other than, well, we're better than them. Okay, that's a crap message. That's no message at all. So it's deeply, deeply frustrating, disturbing, and all of that.
So think of it this way. You know how the Democrats decided to get behind this guy, even though he's a coal magnate and he's a billionaire, and I'm sure he doesn't share any of the values that a progressive Democrat would share. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine it happening the other way, that it was a real liberal Republican running for governor somewhere and the GOP put all this money behind him?
Inconceivable
that there was two super liberal guys running for a governorship. One's a Democrat, one's a super liberal Republican, and the Republicans want to get this liberal Republican and elected. That would never, ever happen. But the Democrats will put all their weight behind a super conservative guy who claims he's a Democrat, because they don't give a shit about going left. They really want to go where the money is, just like you said.
All they care about.
It's insane.
It is insane. And right now there's donors in Florida, right? You've heard about that story, that are backing the Republican over a Democrat. So a lot of Hillary donors are now. We need a revolution, and Bernie wasn't wrong. He was right, and it's getting almost too late for one.
Yeah, look, we need a party that actually listens to the concerns of the electorate. And right now we don't have that. Mm-hmm. And it worries me. Instead, we have a bunch of defiant people who have enjoyed this system and they don't want to change it. You know, and the defiance is what gets to me the most, because you have a huge portion of the electorate telling you, please just listen to our concerns, and they're like, no, no. And then they go ahead and antagonize those people. We'll continue antagonizing them. They're not going to vote for you.
It didn't work last time. Let's keep doing it.
And I'm just amazed at the people in the crowd who think that because this billionaire coal magnate switched from Democrat to Republican, it matters, you know, a pittance to them.
I know.
All of a sudden, your lives are going to be better? Like, come on, guys.
Anyway.
Sad.
Babies. Anyway, all right. We got to take a break, and then we'll start with the second hour. Thank you to Jimmy and Steve for helping me do hour one. When we come back, Brett Ehrlich and Ida Rodriguez join us. So stay tuned.